Welcome to Standard Chartered Money Insights, a podcast series by Standard Chartered Bank that brings you market views and insights on the go.
Hello everyone, I'm John and welcome to Through the Noise. At the start of the month, Fed raised the benchmark rate by 25 basis points and hinted that it may put on hold the second steepest rate hiking cycle. Over the month, we heard a mix of hawkish and dovish commentaries from the Fed policy makers. The May minutes released yesterday showed that Fed officials are leaning towards a pause in June. Of course, Fed decisions are central to any investment discussions. In this week's episode, we are going to explore our thoughts on that and the implication on other asset classes. Joining me today is Manpreet Gill, our Chief Investment Officer for Africa, Middle East, and Europe. Welcome, Manpreet. Let's start with the most obvious question. Are Fed hikes done for this cycle? If they are, is that a positive signal for risky assets?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on. Yes, we are of the view that the Fed may be set to pause from the next meeting onwards. But I would emphasize that that pause still comes against what looks like a pretty difficult US macroeconomic backdrop. Now, on the positive side, headline measures of inflation have continued to soften, and we have seen the pace of deterioration in some growth indicators starting to slow. And of course, we had the corporate earnings surprise on the upside in the first quarter earnings. However, the level of inflation does remain far above 2%, and we've seen most forward-looking growth indicators remain weak. The latest one being, of course, what we saw from bank lending conditions, pointing to weaker growth ahead. That's why, overall, we still believe that while the Fed may be set to pause, it comes against a backdrop where an economic recession is likely. Now, for equity markets, there's a slightly different sort of short and long-term view. You can make a case that in the very short term, talking about the next few weeks or even couple of months, markets could see some support. History has shown that equity markets have indeed risen in many, albeit not all cases, in the months right after the Fed paused its rate hiking cycle. We also know that some measures of investor positioning also remain excessively bearish, which can be a contrarian indicator. However, when you look beyond this very short-term technical horizon, we don't really see a Fed pause as a bullish outcome given some of the weak fundamentals we just described. I mean, history shows us that pauses in Fed rate hiking cycles that occur when the US bond yield curve is inverted have actually not been that supportive for equity markets long term, which is most probably because an inverted yield curve has been a relatively reliable predictor of an economic recession. So overall, I think where that leaves us is that while we could see a little bit of this, support for equity markets extend in the short term, we'd really sort of, not leave aside the long-term fundamental backdrop and instead use any rallies in equities and risky assets to reduce exposure in favor of higher quality, more defensive assets like high quality bonds.
Well, since you touch on equities, let's move on to that. I understand that you have updated several regional equity market views. Could you just help our listeners understand what these are and the rationale behind these decisions?
That's right. We have actually amended some of our views. I think these are, of course, an important consideration because it's still important to use our underweight in equities well through regional and sector views. Now, on the upgrade side, the first change we've made, of course, is an upgrade to Japanese equities, which we've raised to an overweight. Now, there are three reasons behind this view. First is that we have got relatively higher inflation, and even if that's only partly sustained, in our view, that raises the chances of higher nominal economic growth, which, is ultimately what matters for higher, corporate earnings growth. Second, of course, we've got a surge in share repurchases, and this we believe has room to extend and offer support to the market. And third, of course, this comes against a backdrop of valuations, which still remain inexpensive despite the rally and, of course, improving corporate governance. Now, I will acknowledge that our view of a stronger yen is a risk to this view, but we believe that can be mitigated by taking, unhedged currency exposure to this market. The other overweight, of course, which remains unchanged, is on Asia ex Japan equities. But within that, we have trimmed our China view relative to Asia back to a neutral. Now, overall, we still believe it's likely that China's economy is moving past its sweet spot in terms of peak positive economic and earnings surprise, which means that further growth from here is likely to be increasingly dependent on policy actions to sustain growth. Now, we do believe these will be forthcoming, which is why we retain our overweight on Asia ex Japan. Let's not forget, you know, Chinese equities are, you know, about a 35% weight there, but we do believe it's prudent to trim risk by sort of scaling back our view on Chinese equities within Asia ex Japan to a neutral. Now, that's, of course, on the upgrade side. Overweights, of course, always have to be balanced by underweights. So we do sort of trim our view on US equities to a very marginal underweight. Now, it's a marginal downgrade that it still leaves US equities as a sizable proportion of any diversified portfolio. But at the end of the day, we do believe our view of continued US dollar weakness on a 6-12-month horizon does make it more likely that non-US equities outperform US equities in the long run.
Well, if I could probe deeper, how should investors approach equity sectors? Is this still about being relatively defensive in US and Europe and being cyclical in China?
I'd say broadly it is, but perhaps with the odd exception. So starting with the US, we still like the healthcare and staple sectors, which fits with what you described about preferring a more defensive sector. So healthcare, of course, providing defensive exposure with reasonable valuation in our view. And of course, from a growth perspective, we expect support from oncology and obesity products and, of course, new drug development with the help of AI. And consumer staples, of course, has historically delivered positive EPS growth even during recessions. So those two, of course, more on the defensive side. We have, however, upgraded communication services to an overweight. Now, this is less of a defensive sector, but this is a sector where we see strong earnings momentum. Communications is the only sector that enjoys 2023 earnings upgrades since the start of the year. And valuations, of course, we believe remain an attractive discount to its historical average. So that's in the US. In Europe, our view remains defensive, but we have sort of replaced our preference for utilities with an overweight in healthcare. But that's, of course, on grounds of what we see as attractive growth for the valuation on offer. But in China, of course, our tilt remains more pro-cyclical. And we really sort of focus on overweights now in two sectors. First, of course, is communication services, which is dominated by media and entertainment companies. And we believe these should benefit from greater consumer spending, the recovery in advertising, and, of course, policy support for internet platforms. The other one, of course, is consumer discretionary, which we believe should benefit from the ongoing reopening recovery and policymaker priorities, of course, to boost domestic consumption. So those are the two sectors we'd focus on in China.
Well, we spoke a lot about equities. We can't forget about our bonds and income investors. Does your updated Fed outlook change anything for them?
Well, within bonds, our views haven't really changed. Key preference of ours still remains for high-quality bonds that should benefit from a fall in government bond yields. So what that means for us, of course, is we maintain our overweight on developed market investment-grade bonds. That, of course, consistent with our view that, 10-year U.S. government bond yield should fall below 3% over the next 12 months. High-quality government bonds, of course, are less exposed to the risk of rising bankruptcies, which one normally sees in the riskier corporate bonds during recessions. The other overweight, of course, we maintain is on Asia dollar bonds, which meet a lot of the similar conditions in terms of quality and benefiting from falling dollar yields. But I would emphasize a relative preference here for investment-grade bonds over high yield in Asia. And that's because high-yield bonds, in our view, of course, are more vulnerable to a deterioration in credit quality. That's on bonds, of course. For income investors specifically, we still think a multi-asset income strategy remains attractive. It offers about a 6% yield today, which we think is interesting in light of what we think expect to be a Fed pause. Few changes within our multi-asset income strategies, though. One is we continue to favor a significant overweight towards fixed income at the expense of equities. And it's interesting that when you look at that headline yield, much more of that, of course, coming disproportionately from bonds rather than high dividend yield equities. Let's not forget that high DV equities are also, in our view, vulnerable to some extent from a downgrade, from the downside risk, rather, to corporate earnings. Slower economic growth, of course, typically benefits bonds as well. Though within bonds, two changes, of course. One is Amongst riskier bonds, we have a relative preference for high yield bonds relative to leveraged loans. And that's simply because we believe in a falling yield environment, there's less grounds to take the risk from loans. And the other is, of course, we're neutral between high yield bonds and subordinated financials.
Well, so bottom line is, firstly, Fed likely to pause, but not exactly bullish for risky assets amidst a very challenging macro backdrop. Secondly, we prefer Asia equities, and that includes Japan. Thirdly, sector-wise, we are still defensive in US and Europe, and like the consumer-related sectors in China. And lastly, we still find the income allocation attractive, and high-quality bonds are preferred. So with that, we will close this week's episode. Thank you, Manpreet, for the valuable insights. If you need more details on what we have just discussed, please refer to our latest Global Market Outlook report, which we just published today. Thank you so much for listening in. Enjoy the weekend ahead. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Standard Chartered Money Insights, a podcast series by Standard Chartered Bank. For more details on the latest market insights, subscribe to Standard Chartered Money Insights.